Welcome to Finding Success Podcast. I'm Antti Pietilä, and today we are going to discuss with Max Persensky from Promo Republic what it's like to be an Ukraine founding a startup in Finland aiming for US markets. Welcome to show, Max.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Antti, for inviting me to tell my story. Happy to be here.
So your story is quite interesting. We are going to discuss about many layers, starting from of course the what's like the Finnish startup ecosystem, what kind of services you have found here, why did you actually choose Finland to start with, and to make things clear, you didn't move here now because of the current Russian invasion, but quite much earlier. So you're not refugee in that sense.
Yeah.
And then we are of course going to discuss about all the things growing a business and going to US market, all the pivots and you need to take, and what works and what doesn't work in your business. But let's start from a few figures. Your Promo Republic is around 2 million ARR at the moment, 35 people in quite many locations.
So we have our head office here in Helsinki, and because we're targeting US market, we have our sales people, sales and marketing kind of hub in the East Coast of US in New York. And our team is pretty distributed. I'm Ukrainian, so obviously we have people in Ukraine, but also all around Eastern Europe and Western Europe. And also in the UK.
Let's talk about the product itself. So what is Promo Republic all about?
What's
the customer problem you're trying to solve?
Yeah. So we are a software as a service in marketing technology. We're a marketing platform for franchise companies in North America. Okay, of course, European franchises can use us as well, but we have chosen US as our main market. So what our product specifically does, we're helping franchise companies that have lots of locations, like physical locations. Mm-hmm. So our platform helps every single location to be visible online on all these new platforms, like review sites, listing sites, social media platforms, Google Maps, local search. So we just make sure that if someone is looking for a specific kind of company, like barbershop or a similar
fast
or a specific business,
exactly.
They just find that specific location in the top search. So,
but you didn't start from the agency side.
Yeah, we didn't. So that's where we found our product market fit, and that's where it scales really nicely now and has a really great retention.
Yeah.
However, to get there, it took us a while to figure out the product, to understand the actual needs of local businesses, because franchisees, those locations, they are like local businesses, like SMBs. And they're non-marketing savvy, non-tech savvy. So we needed to figure out how to make sure they can actually use marketing software, but still it doesn't require much time from them to succeed on online visibility.
And for those kind of companies, small operations basically, running the show, whether it's a restaurant, a barbershop or whatever, it might be, all these, so keeping your company listed on all the different sites and being present online is quite much work.
It is. And that's actually what we started with. So initially we launched product for small businesses to simplify their presence on social media.
Yeah.
And we know that social media works only if you are regularly, consistently posting quality content, which is really hard to prioritize being an entrepreneur running a small business. So with that idea of actually making that happen for small businesses, we've launched initial Promo Republic, automating everything that could be automated to run social media marketing, but also templatizing. So we've built like a huge library of ready-made social media posts for pretty much every industry. And and made sure that an owner of a flower shop could actually grab those templates and fill their content calendar for the whole month up front within half an hour.
Yeah.
So that was the initial product that we've built for small businesses. And it took us some time to make it easy to use, because if your product is not intuitive, you cannot survive being an SMB SaaS. And also we needed to really understand what makes it work for small businesses to get foot traffic from social media to their shops. What type of content that should be?
You started from social media, but when did you add the other listing sites and stuff like that? Because on the you didn't mention social media in the what you are doing now.
Exactly, I did. So it's still like one of the main products that we are providing, but we went, as you correctly said, beyond social media marketing. So we added reputation management. So that's the product that helps to work with the reviews and also local SEO. So the product that helps to increase your search rank. And that happened when we moved into upmarket to franchise space. And that's where we got actually requests from our customers. Okay, you help us really nicely with our localized social media management, but we have other needs. What about listing sites? What about reviews?
Yeah.
We have such a small team as a franchise corporate office. We cannot manage 3 or 5 SaaS tools at the same time with different interfaces. We want to have all in one. So that's where we realized there is an opportunity of moving to multi-product.
Then probably you also removed quite many competition out of the equation. Yeah, there are a ton of social media sharing apps.
Exactly. And also, social media is very important. However, it's really hard to attribute your business KPIs, like sales, to social media results. Everyone knows you have to do it, but no one knows how to justify investment into it.
Mm.
So we had to go to other channels where it's easier to actually attribute.
Yeah, and you probably need to start from SEO being found, getting good reviews and so forth. So that's how you get customers, and social media is probably more to the next phase. Once someone has found you, you kind of start to get their
Updates. And you bring them back to shops after they already know. But there's a lot of discovery happening now with platforms like TikTok and Instagram going into more localized feeds.
Yeah.
So it's not uncommon where if you're scrolling your like TikTok feed and you see content from local small businesses there. That's how the TikTok algorithms are working, and other platforms went local as well. So it also works for businesses discovery. That was my point.
But let's get back to how all the things started. So you were in Kyiv, Ukraine. We are talking about something like 2014 or something like that. And you are running a digital marketing agency at that time. So how did you end up here? And how did you end up founding Promo Republic?
So and there was an idea of Promo Republic already worked on by my co-founder Val Grabko, and I was actually running my digital marketing agency that was actually also involved in startups, but we were building like startups for big FMCG brands. I'll give you an example. We created a niche social network for pregnant women and young mothers for Huggies brand of diapers.
Okay.
And that went really successful in Ukraine, and then we could monetize it introducing online sales there. So those type of long-term digital assets we were working on within this agency. And And I met my co-founder Val. He was thinking about Promo Republic already there, and I was mentoring and also invested a bit as an angel investor. However, then 2014 happened, which influenced a lot my agency business because of the revolution of dignity and the whole like economic downturn caused by that. Of course, influenced the budgets of multinational companies in Ukraine. They were not expecting like consumers to buy their products in that amount that they bought them earlier in 2013. So I was thinking, okay, so now I really need to look for opportunities of being involved in business that has customers globally, and the business will not be so much influenced by local like crises. And that's why what brought me to actually supporting Promo Republic's founder a lot with my advice and some investment, because of the ambition, or because it was marketing technology and I was from marketing space, so marketer, and we've built social network ourselves, right? So we knew how to do social media for small businesses because of that. So I actually grabbed a CTO of my agency, and we kind of came together as a team of three co-founders, Val, Mike, and myself, and built the product in Estonian Startup Accelerator, Startup Wise Guys.
How did you end up there?
We applied to Startup Accelerator, and for us, it was an opportunity to get some funding into the company, but also to figure out the product that would be globally competitive. We believed we will, and I needed my brain to be reprogrammed, right? So I was an agency guy, and of course, you have to think differently when you're running a startup.
Yeah.
And and that acceleration program was really useful for us. And at the end of it, when we already knew what we are doing, we had our perfectly oiled pitch. It just happened that Slush was taking place.
Okay.
And I knew nothing about Finland, like literally. Only that there is Santa Claus somewhere there in the darkness. So really, I didn't know much about the startup ecosystem there. And once I appeared at Slush with the pitch of my startup, actually things started to work out. I mean, we got interest from a lot of angel investors and funds. I thought it was a real interest back then. Maybe it was just a polite politeness. But yeah, but we got interest from one of the local players to invest, Fenecta.
Yeah.
And that was at that time digitalizing their services for small businesses, and social media management tool was something that they really needed back then. And we were kind of pulled into Finnish startup ecosystem through interest to our startup, despite the really early stage.
And Fenecta at that time was probably thinking about the tool regarding their customer base, which is
exactly
totally local, but that didn't turn out.
That didn't. So they had this idea of actually not only buying startups, but also investing in early stage startups. But still, on the last stage where we pitched our solution to the CEO, everything went smooth, but the last question was about our revenues, and we said that our revenues are 500. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Oh, 500,000. That's a good start, and we can take it from there." And we said, "No, it's just without 1,000. It's 500."
Yeah.
And for him, that was not enough to validate the service, and they were really polite, saying to us, "Oh, let's not team up now. You are too small. It would be a kiss of a death." And maybe they were right, because maybe that partnership would turn us into a localized business here in Finland.
You are probably right. And for large companies, they need to have quite much traction already because of the way that they lead their businesses. And even 500K would probably be a bit too little.
Maybe, but yeah, and that's what happened at Slush. So Funecta lead, but also we discovered Startup Sauna, an accelerator that is really short, equity free, and really intense. And we realized, okay, so maybe we should consider Finland as a base for further development. And we applied and got accepted to Startup Sauna program, and that was a really game-changing for us. And that was like a supersonic integration into the local ecosystem. Yeah. We got to know a lot of people that helped us a lot further down the road. We got our first investors from FIBAN on board. We discovered the opportunities of Business Finland that kind of co-invests with the private investors in SaaS companies, and we just decided to grow from here.
When did you actually technically founded the company? Because we were discussing earlier that you actually didn't have the entity, legal entity, up and running when you were in Estonia.
Yeah, yeah. So we had some kind of like an SPV to just get the initial investment, and but the actual company that we have founded here in Finland, that was in at the end of 2015.
Yeah.
So we've been operating without like actually like a legal entity for some time before we were sure what we're actually doing, how we're splitting the equity and so on. So we gave ourselves time to figure that out. And I think that's something that I would also advise to other founders, to fund the company specifically when you already know what you're doing and when it's really needed for some specific things. But I would definitely advise to have informally on paper your agreements with the co-founders, what you're actually building, what are the expectations, and what happens if one of the founders wants to leave, and other things that are kind of obvious.
Kind of shareholder agreement, but not a shareholder agreement in a sense. And I agree with you that in the early phases, you're probably make pivots regarding the target market, the product, and business model, and so forth. In quite a short time, you will learn a lot, and people you think that will be a great asset for the original plan may not be assets for the next phase. Or people who think that they have time and energy and passion for the product once it's developed, or once they learn that there's quite much hard work ahead, they kind of drop out. So it's much easier when they are not shareholders that you need to acquire their shares or something like that, because you probably don't have much money to do it anyway. The longer you manage without the legal entity, the easier it is. And also, you'll enjoy the longer their startup status, because you can easily spend 1 year or 2 year in, let's say, hibernation, finding yourself mode where you're not doing any revenue or any actually even building a product. And some financing instruments require that you are less than 5 year old, for example, so you can easily lose 2 years there.
Cannot add anything to that. That's really how it is.
But let's go through the Finnish startup ecosystem. So we're getting some two of the list of 15 out of. So what else?
Okay, so I mean, the whole, we're really grateful to Finnish startup ecosystem for where we are. At that time, we of course didn't have any experience of Silicon Valley or US as a whole. None of our three co-founders have been in the US before actually launching there. So we had no idea how the country is, how the business culture works, and so on. And actually, we're also grateful to Finnish startup ecosystem that we ended up in the US. because we were kind of pushing that thing. Okay, we are launching in the US, but actually to go there, three of us, it takes time, it takes money. Yeah. Once we're there, we want to stay at least a month or even longer just to get a feel. And that's why it was like a hard decision when to do it, when to prioritize this trip with our like limited budget. But we happen to be one of the best performing teams in the Startup Accelerator, Startup Sauna. And for those, for several top teams, like there was a Silicon Valley trip as a part of the program. And that's where we actually ended up being. So we were kind of physically pushed by the Finnish startup ecosystem to the Valley, where we spent 2 weeks. And then we went further to our seed investor, who is based in Boston. And we learned about the ecosystem there. And obviously New York was close to Boston. That's where we also spent around 1 or 2 weeks. So we had like the whole initial overview about the main centers of startups in the US. And of course, that was eyes opening trip. And that increased our ambition level a lot. So maybe Finland cannot provide all these things, but Finnish startup ecosystem actually pushed us to the place where we could get those things, skills, and initial network.
Were you considering Europe in the early phases as a target market or not? How did you? Of course, we now know the why you end up in targeting US, but
yes. So part of our service of the initial product was this content library. The library of social media posts templates. And when we were thinking, okay, so now if we scale in Europe, we would need to translate it to a lot of languages. Mm-hmm. So we became gray hair. So that was so hard for us to do because our content library was actually like smart because we had all the data on the performance of every template once posted by a small business, because we got this like data on all the likes and comments, we could tell which posts actually work best. And based on that information, we could make more of these. So we thought, okay, so it's all language and culture specific. If we do it in one country, it should be a big enough country to actually scale there with the same product. Now when we went up market, it's not relevant anymore. Every franchise company create their own content library or digital assets, how we call them now. But back in the days, we were really specific to language, and that's why we chose a bigger market.
Yeah, that's probably a natural choice. So that's one thing. I'm always wondering that we have something like 750 million people in Europe, and somehow we all end up targeting, let's say, Nordics, Netherlands, UK, US. So it's kind of
English speaking Europe and US. I guess.
So you talk about SLAS. SLAS have probably been a good place for getting funding also in the later rounds as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a unique conference. Of course, organization is really great, especially the matchmaking tool and area and so on. But the actual timing of the conference is very good. So it's the last one for sure in the startup conferences sense. And it's so close to Christmas. And everyone wants to give it like a last shot to make like last deals to close rounds before Christmas. So it's like really close to deadline and things just happen way faster than they would happen on any other conference. And of course, we have the luxury of being based in Helsinki. We have all these people just coming to us. And that's so great. So they're like coming to our home and you can host them, you can show around, you can build relationships, and of course you can meet a lot of people from all over the world that you wouldn't actually meet in your daily routine. And if you want to connect with the local ecosystem, of course you go to Arctic 15 conference, which is much more cozy and smaller.
And even more focused on funding.
Exactly.
You also mentioned Epicenter, Maria01, banks.
Yeah,
and those kind of
things.
So,
I mean, like, if you continue what we benefited from being based in Finland, I mean, the players of startup ecosystem. So I mentioned Startup Accelerator, but there are also co-working spaces, which are also kind of magnetizing everyone who is connected to startups. Like Maria01 obviously has a great community for the earlier stage startups. Epicenter Helsinki being rather a place where you connect with a later stage founders. So I think it's like a scale up co-working space and community space. And obviously, if you're talking about financing, so you have Team Finland, like with Business Finland having various products for startups of all stages, Finvera helping to get additional funding, collaborating with the Finnish banks like Nordea and OP. So they have like mutual products, but that's obvious for local entrepreneurs, I guess, but for foreign entrepreneurs, it's actually like not a no-brainer thing. I think that's unique, and it's kind of a secret tip of Finnish startup ecosystem. You don't have that much funding support from the government in any other European country, and we looked and talked with a lot of entrepreneurs. So.
Yeah, and that's usually really important in the early stages. Where
definitely, especially in SaaS, where it takes really long to figure and nail that product market fit, and you can either you just save on equity, and you don't have this problem of founders not having enough skin in the game once you are in the scaling phase. So that's really helpful, and you get those as a soft loans, and of course once you figured out your product market fit and you are growing, it's okay for you to bring this money back. So new entrepreneurs can actually benefit from this funding again. So I think that's a really smart system of soft loans rather than grants.
Yeah, and you also mentioned earlier when we were discussing Business Helsinki or Nyko.
Yes. So yeah, I mean it is an organization that is supporting like local businesses based out of Helsinki, and we are Helsinki-based young company, and we needed to figure out like the initial like legal frameworks and maybe PR communication strategies. So small supportive grants from there, and also some short programs helped us to get initial shareholder agreements done and so on. So that was really, really helpful as well. Those are small things, but they kind of prevent more things to happen. And you just get it solved with help of these awesome guys. So yeah, we're really grateful as well.
There is obviously a ton of things that you need to do in the early phases, and a few thousand here and there and so forth help you get much farther.
Exactly.
What kind of funding you have raised so far?
So we raised all types of funding we could get in the early stages to actually survive and continue building our sales and marketing organization and the product. So in the early days, we raised from angel investors and from seed stage funds, which there are a lot here in Helsinki and in Finland, like overall. There are angels, super angels, and seed stage funds that actually are actively investing into, especially in Finland-based startups, as they know all the legislation and formalities, and contracts are easy to understand and so on. However, we also raised from investors from our target market, US.
Yeah.
So we have some great business angels that actually know that specific market we were targeting. So we got some money from there as well. And being a Finnish company, it's really easy to raise from wherever in Europe. Finland is really known for its simple legal framework and the absence of corruption and the protection of the IP. So no European fund actually has any issues of investing into Finland-based startups. And also, like customers-wise, we're still getting all the money to our Finnish entity from the US, yeah, not actually to our American subsidiary. So it seems like no one has a real issue with payments going to Finland.
What about the US investors? Did they have any problem with the US Finnish entity? Of course, you will probably found them from Slash.
Yeah.
So they're kind of
kind of
already done their homework.
Yes, yes. So I think that it's simple. I mean, every single investor of this world invests in Delaware-based company.
Okay.
But some of them don't invest to others.
All right.
So in terms of like the size of the funnel, I mean, it makes rationally sense to place your company in Delaware.
Yeah.
Right. However, so you don't get the benefits of being like a local startup shorten the sales cycles, raising around you, and still in the early stages. Most investments are not into your KPIs, but rather into you as a founder and your reputation and your track record, personal track record. And it's a lot about building personal like connection and trust with the investor. So I think raising locally is easier than being a Delaware-based company and try to raise in the U.S. where you don't have experience of living and you don't have the network and so on.
And you're kind of one of the thousands and thousands and thousands of startups or tens of thousands.
Harder to stand out.
Yeah.
But if you made it, you get all the benefits.
Yeah, if you are one of the top 100 or so, then it's totally different.
Exactly.
But you have raised for the Finnish entity.
Yes.
Yeah. No. Not your U.S. entity. Yeah.
No.
So they kind of have just a let's say employment office there, kind of thing.
Yes, it's easier to hire people,
especially
if they are like A players, not as entrepreneurs, but rather like have them on payroll. So so it makes them more comfortable for them to be employed.
And in Europe, you use contractors. When they are not in Helsinki, or how do you use your team?
Yeah, so we have people on payroll here and in US.
Yeah,
and other employees are. It's like a standard way when you're running a remote company.
Yeah.
So you have them as a contractor. Yeah.
Have to ask: is it difficult to handle the payments in when you have a team distributed around Europe? Not in your payroll.
Yeah, there are different ways of solving this challenge. So there are startups solving that as a like deal or others, but it's pretty expensive.
Yeah.
To work with them, especially in the early stages. So we are like Ukrainian founders, and we could actually afford hiring like financial manager, bookkeeper. At a pretty low cost, comparing with like consultants or from Ukraine that are actually taking care full time of those things, which ended up to be like way less expensive than going for those services. So we figured it that way, and we're just doing it in house. All the hassle of bookkeeping and payouts and legal stuff and so on.
Do you ask them to be an entrepreneur, so you pay them as a, let's say, as a company, or do you pay as a wage?
They have their own like companies,
entrepreneurs. So they handle all the pensions and insurance and stuff like that. So
which is easier for us, and they can enjoy the flexibility of working remote.
Yeah.
So that's a win-win, I guess.
And obviously it's really difficult if someone is placed in a country where you don't have a local presence to actually handle those kind of things.
Yeah, exactly.
Really difficult to learn them. How about your US concrete operation? Obviously it started from the small businesses, and how did you get them? How did you get, or let's say get the more broad question first. How do you get customers?
Yeah. So we had also like pretty, I would guess, a non-standard story of, so of course we launched our product in the US and we had just a couple of customers and these are small business customers. Of course, they're not using product every day. Maybe they signed up, maybe they even paid, but then nothing really happens. And having just a couple of them, couple of dozens of them, doesn't really help you to build the product, right? And you're just sitting and nothing happens and the energy level in the team goes down and you cannot really do much to get more of them. So with the SMB, you need to have thousands to actually have all these metrics. So what we did, we went for this kind of Black Friday type of deal with a company called AppSumo. So what they do, they do this Black Friday type of deals every day. Yeah. So they have a huge list of potential buyers that want to pay once the price of the annual price. They pay once and they get lifetime access to the product. So it's like take it or leave it, once in a lifetime offer. And it was really hard to get into this kind of schedule of AppSumo deals, but somehow we did it.
Yeah.
And within 2 weeks, we got something like 4,000 users.
Okay.
And the benefit of it is that we got a lot of cash. So, of course, we had to give up like 70% or something like that to AppSumo for them to actually do this promotion. Yeah. But 30% was still a lot. That was a couple of hundred thousand, right?
Yeah.
And that was almost like running, I don't know, crowdfunding campaign in a way, right? And what it did magic. So it brought like thousands of customers within several weeks.
Yeah.
And imagine how many questions to all the about all the bugs, about all the unperfect interfaces we received within this time. So that turned us from a kind of hibernating zombie startup to actually super energized 24/7 working team of a growing startup.
And
that thing actually pushed us to create a really good product. So we just stopped getting all these complaints and messages and so on. And we learned how to deal with a lot of feedback and not to get kind of defocused on every single claim. So we have to think strategy, we have to prioritize features. So that brought us a lot. And and that's how we think, because of that AppSumo deal, we actually got our really good product that really helped small businesses.
How do you see the AppSumo? Now it's several years once you made those lifetime deals.
Yes.
And obviously you are not gonna get any revenue from those customers other than probably some upsells.
Yeah.
You can manage. Many entrepreneurs are kind of wary of making the decision to go with AppSumo because of that.
Yes.
But for you, it's kind of a funding round.
We looked at it as a funding round and as a customer development initiative. We made it in a smart way, so we didn't put our like regular product on AppSumo. So we made like a special product with a specific feature set.
Okay.
So so that those users couldn't actually claim all the advancements of our main product.
All right.
So we just said, okay, so that's what you bought. There will be no more features. So if they wanted more features, they had to switch to monthly payments. And I can talk about AppSumo experiences long. I don't think we should dedicate all of the time here, but it has obviously different sides of positive and negative.
Yeah,
and for some companies, it's a really good channel to get initial customers if you do it right. And I don't see a downside of it. If companies are in this cheapium mode, or free or not freemium but cheapium, so they can really get those initial customers, and then they run out of something, and then they have to pay. So it's actually a good.
Yeah.
We were not that case, but I saw startups benefiting from AppSumo being in this GPU model.
Was it a different version of the product or different product itself? So it's
different feature constellation, like limited features constellation that was not on the pricing page. It was like AppSumo special or something.
Okay. Yeah. But what about the else? Okay, that was a really good kickoff.
Yeah. And after that, we had to go like content marketing to generate those inbound leads and traffic. So we started to educate small businesses how to actually succeed on social, inspire them for actions. And that we learned how to do it, especially in the US, like talking to US businesses out of Europe. And that skill is still very useful to us now in the enterprise market.
Okay.
Because enterprise software typically is really hard to use. And decision on buying it is kind of top level, but then the actual users start using it and sometimes it's not very easy to use. We came from SMB world where products are extremely easy to use and you get a lot of support in forms of content that actually inspires you and explains you why to use it. And we apply all this, these two things, like easy to use product and our skill of actually onboarding fast and activating user fast that we gained in SMB to enterprise, and that gives us competitive advantage.
Yeah.
So our products our product is used 10 times more actively by locations, by franchisees, which are small business owners, than the products that were built for enterprise and that were built for kind of centralized marketing, where everything is done from the headquarters. So that actually, the start in the SMB made us stand out among other enterprise tools.
It's technically usually challenging to add those, let's say, multi-location, multi-franchisee features where you probably even have not just US and all the franchises below that, but even regional areas where you have regional teams and so forth. So technically, usually quite difficult to add them later on. But on the other hand, when you have a product that's easy to use, it's kind of, like I said, you have the advantage, which is, again, from those top-down approaches, you don't get that feedback because you are only talking to the enterprise customer who don't have much feedback coming from the franchisees, and they are struggling. Exactly. Why don't they use the core product?
So sometimes it seems to me that we understand the needs of franchisees even better than franchisor who we are talking to, right? So that's what our customers value in us, because we bring this to actually their, this, like, we bring the idea of distributed marketing to their businesses. So we are increasing their marketing team, enabling franchisees for professional marketing with our platform. So.
And when we're talking about the content marketing here, it's important to understand that it's actually what you are probably doing is to help the users to understand what they should be doing, not with your product, but overall, the whole methodology about the thing, as what should be doing. It's more like customer success, but even one step higher than the product itself.
Exactly. And moreover, because we have all the franchisees doing social media marketing themselves, but still in a compliant way, like according to brand books and so on, because we have this kind of compliance features. But they are doing it locally, knowing the context and experimenting because they have open mind. Maybe they didn't study marketing forever. So they try things that would never be tried by the head office.
Yeah.
And they succeed sometimes unexpectedly.
Yeah.
And then our system helps, identifies this anomaly. And okay, oh my God, that post went viral. What happened there? And then of course, marketers in the corporate office can reverse engineer and say, okay, so that's what they've done.
Yeah.
So let's apply the same thing to all other franchises. Because it's in a way same business. Some context is not applicable everywhere, but some is. And that's why you have this kind of flywheel of learning how to do marketing, because you just have so many more tests that you are doing on the local level. So that's really really cool approach to marketing, and I think that's the future of marketing, making the help, creating a technology that actually enables a company for really localized marketing, context-specific marketing, but still having it under some guidelines. And
the franchisee knows the customer very well, because what they are doing, they are serving them.
Yes. Yes.
All the time. Yes. Whereas the MBA is at the head office, doesn't have much of understanding of the customer problem other than they are reading from their own material.
And both is important.
Yeah.
You still need strategic projects and nationwide projects that create a synergy of the awareness and so on. But you also need highly contextualized marketing and content marketing to succeed locally and stand out locally.
You are basically teaching social media marketing for the small businesses, but in the franchise.
Yeah, social media marketing, but also other types of local marketing channels, like review management, listing management, local SEO. Yeah. So these are the parts of our one local marketing suite for franchises.
Important to understand that content is not necessarily content. It's not necessarily marketing, what you're doing, but it's part of the product, part of the offering.
Yes.
So it's part of the value that it's not just a cold tool, but it's a cold tool that comes with all the content that helps them to learn the game.
Exactly. And also the whole kind of the flywheel thing is very important. So once they start using our product, we gather data, and we turn this data into actual actionable suggestions for that specific franchise.
Yeah.
At some point, there is enough data to make really precise suggestions what to do marketing-wise, what to do next marketing-wise, which initiatives to prioritize. Shall this cluster of locations focus more on reviews, fixing the reviews, or creating engagement on social platforms? And that's, of course, this data aspect of combining data from different channels into one and making sense of it for guys at the franchisor level is very important and contributes to kind of competitive, to being able to compete for our customers. Yeah.
Because what we usually do is we do more, which is natural for us. And if it's social media, we do more of that. But that doesn't necessarily increase our revenue. It's usually improving those things that we are bad at, which are uncomfortable for us, which we don't know where we can make the highest improvements with effort.
Yeah.
So kind of raising all the activities to a certain level.
And they just depend so much from one each other. If you don't care about the reviews, your local search ranks are going down.
Yeah.
If you're not generating engagement on social media, you don't get all these comments and shares. No one sees your content.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's all those things are interconnected.
Yeah.
And building this local visibility of every single location is an asset.
Yeah.
And that holds. And you can develop it further. You can keep it on the same level. But you cannot afford not doing anything there, because you will go down in all ratings and you will be practically invisible online. And
having an operation where you can kind of touch all the bases with the that you learn how to run the whole show, it's actually quite difficult. But once you are there, it's surprisingly, let's say, effortless.
Very difficult, because you have to integrate into all these platforms, and there's not enough fingers on hands and feet.
And learning
both of
all
us.
The, let's say, the different games, because
everyone
has a different game. So not about tools, but all about the game in TikTok is different from the game in Facebook, and it's different from Google Maps.
And TikTok could be irrelevant for some types of businesses, like I think it's relevant for all types of businesses now, yeah. Like increasingly, but yeah, I mean, the selection of platforms is specific for different industries, I agree.
Once you made the pivot from SMBs to the franchisors, obviously your marketing probably changed, your approach, customer acquisition changed a lot.
Yeah.
In the early phases, when you're targeting the mom and pops, so to speak, brick and mortar, whatever we call them, you have to be very cost efficient. So it was probably inbound or ad driven? Or
yeah, it was inbound, a bit of paid ads. Yeah. We experimented with different channels. However, like to succeed in social media, you really have to be either like a freemium product that automatically generates you free users that you then can convert to paying customers, like product-led way, or otherwise you cannot manage the high churn, which is just there. So we knew that we don't have that much resources to actually build out such a big like marketing machine to be able to refill the high churn with new customers and upgrade the new customers. Yeah. So we just knew that we will not succeed there. So we went up market, as you correctly said, with two products, one for franchises, the other for agencies.
Yeah.
Like approach to sell to agencies was similar as SMBs because these were small agencies. However, the retention was way better.
Yeah.
So we kind of continued the SMB approach in agents with the agency product. In parallel, we launched franchise product that required totally different approach.
Yeah.
It's an enterprise sales. So we were targeting mid-market, also enterprise deals with outbound. So we initially launched.
So you kind of have at that moment, you have kind of three different.
Yeah, yeah. So we had like this SMB one that we kind of abandoned already, yeah. But it was running by itself. And we had this agency product and French product, and we had money to kind of maintain both of them. But we had to decide at the end of the year which one we will focus on completely. Because of the lack of the resources, riding two horses at the same time was not the smartest idea.
Let's talk about the price points a bit. For the SMBs, the annual subscription was around
like $100. I mean, $10 a month. So really low cost because of the high.
And for agencies, the average were around
close to 2,500-3,000. So we could actually afford very kind of transactional type of sales.
Yeah, and obviously for the enterprise segment, it depends on the size of the network, to speak.
Exactly. So the sky is the limit. Yeah. Especially if you have several products, it can go into seven digits a year. We don't have that yet, but we have like a bunch of six-digit deals with our franchise customers.
Yeah, and obviously totally different sales dynamics or sales funnel dynamics in all of these three. So if you talk a little bit about the agency part, what is in that segment, what is the way for you to get the customers?
Yeah, so in agency sector, we continued what we have been doing with SMBs, but we made our first hire.
Yeah.
Even before actually having our product ready. So we hired US based sales guy. It was our first hire from the US. And we hired from our competitor. And so, I mean, the sales guy knew how to actually sell social media services to small businesses because he was doing it several years in a well-oiled sales organization. And we didn't expect him selling like 100 contracts within a couple of weeks.
Okay.
And he was driven by the commission and so on. And we didn't really have the product. So we had to actually, the idea was to deliver it with manually.
Yeah,
positioning it as a product, but actually doing part of the things ourselves, with the hands. So not really scalable. And so that's how we actually learned a lot how agencies operate, because we had to actually talk to them and literally deliver them this solution. So, I mean, hiring salesperson can work really well. However, you need to be ready to have your product scalable.
Yeah, things can happen really quickly.
Exactly. If it's the right hire, yes.
Yeah, and you probably estimated much slower ramp up.
Yes.
So you would have had time to build things up.
So that was pretty crazy. That was almost like this AppSumo type of rush.
Yeah.
Where everyone worked 24 hours a day. It was the same with this agency product. When we got like Daniel actually closing all these all these deals and in a short period of time. However, like in the franchise space, it was a different approach. So first it was like founder-led sales. So we had to figure out how to actually do it. So I was leading that. We were collaborating with a small company that was kind of generating leads for us, sending out cold emails and LinkedIn messages. And one because we didn't know how to do it. And after like 6 months of them doing it, we just started to notice, okay, we can do it better.
Yeah.
And we knew how to do that cold outreach already working with them. So I would also advise other companies in the earlier stage to work with those lead gen companies to get initial like low hanging fruits on a demo calls. And at some point we were already sure that we have enough leads coming in more predictable way of the ideal customer personas. And that's where we made our first account exec hire. And I was less involved in demos, but still keeping the finger on the pulse. And at some point, we actually managed to get an interim head of sales who knew how to create the system, who knew how to integrate Salesforce, who knew what playbooks are and how to create them and make sure everyone sticks to the playbook and so on. So it was actually pretty hard to get that type of a person on board, being a Ukrainian-founded startup out of Finland, but selling in the US at the very early stage. I think we were like sub a million in ARRs when we
Did those hires in the US or Helsinki?
In US.
Yeah.
However, we made it with help of a consultant who actually helped to position this vacancy like on a really top level. So he had his approach how to actually do that.
Yeah.
So he created a really wide funnel of candidates with the LinkedIn ads, and then he kind of filtered out maybe top two, and then went for one candidate that he really wanted to get for us. And kind of said, hey, we've done a really huge funnel. And actually, now that you're in top three out of 300.
Yeah.
And you really need to give your best and do this plan of sales plan of 90, 60, 30 days, what should be done. And then and he was really cool and experienced and many times chief sales officer himself. And in a way, like his credibility brought credibility to us as well, and we could get this person on board. And that was an A player, and they exist, and they deliver indeed. And it's never kind of an overpaying thing if a salesperson actually delivers. It's a revenue flow. Like each salesperson is a flow of revenue if he or she hit the quota. So great channel, but how to make it work is a challenge, and you just need to be ready to try and fail.
At the moment, do you have a separate person to create those leads, or are the account executives also doing the cold calling in the front? Or
No. We thought that they would be like account execs would generate leads for themselves, but that doesn't really work like that, or it didn't work in our case. So I would never hire now like account exec without being sure we can deliver enough leads for him or her to work on and to close. And we made this mistakes actually twice hiring additional account exec before we could generate leads.
Yeah.
And we're generating leads from inbound and outbound and also community led marketing approach.
Do you have some like sales development rep kind of position there?
We do. Yeah. We have even sales operations team lead that is actually kind of working with SDRs and applying different software that help SDRs to generate scheduled calls for account execs, and they collaborate really tightly with marketing department that generates content and all the webinars and roundtables and community facilitation approaches that we're using, and they go hand in hand. So our emails become less cold if they're combined with this like educational, like valuable content that we put into them.
So one of the problems that, let's say, Finns especially are having, that they don't build the SDR operation or the lead gen operation properly. For an account executive, if he or she needs to do the whole sales process, takes so much time and reduce the win ratio for the existing prospects as well. The SDR is specialist operation itself. It's still complicated, but you kind of can still focus on calling or emailing or whatever you are doing and not trying to manage the process. The other thing I'm seeing is that we are too often using external agencies, and the problem with the external agencies is that they work for a certain period of time, but what they don't do is they don't help you to build the competencies of doing the operation yourself. So at some point you need to take it in-house and start building your own database and so forth.
Exactly.
Usually you will get leads from contacts that you have contacted before, but the agencies are basically contacting cold base all the time. So they are not learning, they are not getting better, they are not building systems because of the model, that how they work.
Yeah, I believe in agencies at start where you have no clue.
Yeah.
However, now agencies try to make it as a black box. You cannot really learn.
Yeah.
We were working with an agency that was like a startup themselves, and now they have grown to one of the biggest on the market.
Yeah.
It's called Belkins. But back in the days, they were in the beginning, and it was pretty transparent how they did the outreach, and we like internalized it pretty fast and built on top of their knowledge, like our specific knowledge of our customers.
Because the whole operation, how you create leads to your sales team, is really important. And you mentioned there are a ton of things happening there. You have inbound, you're doing outbound, there are...
And community. I think that's underestimated channel that becomes more and more popular to stand out in the harsh competition.
There are events and there are forums and so on. So there's a ton of places where you can go and fish for those leads.
And then you have all the Gartners and Foresters of this world. So analyst relations and media relations go on top.
Yeah. So it's not just marketing and not just sales, but there's a...
It's a cross-functional thing to make it most effective. It's a cross-functional thing.
For the last question, if you were 25-year-old again, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give you your 25-year-old self if he would be starting at this point? Should he start the same kind of business or same kind of career? Or where
I would definitely start like the... Also, my first business would be like a business that could develop globally.
Yeah.
So with the agency, we've grown it several times to pretty high revenue numbers, but then because of something that happened locally in Ukraine, revenues went down, and we were like, oh my God, what we've been doing last 3 years. It was just like time waste. So, so I would encourage actually founding a business that is facing global markets from day one.
Yeah.
And always like combine the opportunities of best places of the world for building startups like Silicon Valley with your specific kind of reality. Because for me, like with the Promo Republic, going to Silicon Valley and relocating completely was a huge challenge back in the days.
Yeah.
Because I had family, two kids, really early, and small revenues of the startup. So to kind of justify my presence there was really hard. And getting like the real value out of it, on top of ambition level and inspirations, was also hard, because we were targeting SMBs, and you can actually target SMBs from Europe. So actually this global vision, and combining the benefits of like best hubs of this world and cozy local hubs where you can make things happen faster.
Yeah, and obviously in Silicon Valley, for example, if you need to hire developers, it's hugely expensive. Every hire is something like many times
expensive hire and lack of loyalty.
Yeah. So. And then probably also difficult to get funding. If you are one of the best, then it's easy.
If you
are not,
you have to prove that you have the center of your life interests in the valley,
yeah.
that you are local, and then it starts to work out so much easier on all fronts.
Yeah.
And it's actually the same in Finland. So once you get the credibility, reputation that you're local, you're here, it like people start to pull you, literally.
Yeah.
So it's a big difference that you're between like being outsider and actually considered outsider and local. And I think it's the same for all the local communities.
Yeah.
So yeah. Not being in between, but still being placed in one place that has nice benefits, I think that's the way to go.
For you, obviously at 25 year old, I don't know if you had kids at that age, but I didn't. You are free to relocate yourself much easier. But once you have kids, especially school age, it's kind of, can you imagine yourself moving to Silicon Valley now?
Yes. But that would require like a big reasoning
yeah.
behind it. So either like a really big growth round
yeah.
where we understand what markets are we going specifically
yeah.
after. So that would be one of the events that
yeah.
would like kind of motivate me to relocate.
Yeah.
So at the moment I'm more like in the mode of fly in like pop-up offices
yeah.
in the US for several weeks.
Yeah.
That worked pretty well for us. But of course, being local, being in the context would accelerate our company
yeah.
dramatically.
But it would be a, let's say, not an easy decision.
It would be harder than at 25 without
yeah.
kids.
Yeah.
That's your point. Yeah.
And for that reason, it makes sense to make a, when you're selecting where you start your company, select somewhere where you can raise your family.
Yeah, I mean, for me it was so easy in Finland, being a foreigner. I didn't understand language, so I'm
yeah.
not distracted even by advertising.
Yeah.
So I really can focus on my business. Like everything works.
Yeah.
Everything is safe. You don't have those additional worries. You don't have to commute. I mean, it's just build your fucking business
yeah.
type of thing, and you have everything there. So that's how I felt at the beginning. It was so easy. And the weather, it's so cozy in the office. I mean,
yeah,
you're not distracted, you're even forced into it. So all these things helped me to actually get, you know, like every additional minute of work is adding on success, right? So
yeah.
it's all, luck plays a role, but it's all about number of hours you're actually working and doing stuff. So here in Finland, I could do way more than I would have done like in Kiev or in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
So for the execution phase, Finland is a great place to be for sure.
Especially this time of year when it's totally
absolutely
you cannot do anything outside and basically you don't have any life outside
yeah,
the work.
Yeah. And for 3 days in a year, Helsinki turns to Bay Area
yeah.
for slush. You have same people, same amount of opportunities, same paid forward culture, same amount of energy. So that has to be utilized to the max by the local interpreters for sure.
And if someone wants to follow you, you can be followed on LinkedIn.
Yeah. It's Max Pecherski on LinkedIn, or just writing me an email to max@promorepublic.com. I will be happy to share whatever I can. So I'm really open about our successes and failures when talking to other entrepreneurs.
Thanks, Max, for being here and sharing your thoughts and your journey from Kiev to Tallinn to Helsinki to US. It's a really inspiring learning about all the pivots and finding the success that you have seems to found now. Thank you for all the listeners who have reached so far. Let's see you on the next episode.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. Thanks a lot to Finnish startup ecosystem that supported us in all types of times where we were doing good, but also in 2022, where we had a huge challenge connected with the war of Ukraine, where part of our team was based. So we're really grateful to support of the country and the startup ecosystem. So you've done definitely something right here in terms of how you support early stage entrepreneurs and beyond. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.